Oh man. So I'm open to, I could tell you my things I could talk about, but I'm, so we got film school. What else would we like to talk about? Anyone else suggestions? Come on. Come on. You guys came in here. Did you really just come in here to just what I wanted to say, or was there anything you wanted to maybe hear about? Anything? Anything? I'm open. What do you got? Anything? Just film school? Just, well, thanks.
Somebody said that it's a joke anyway, because Marcus made a comment about it yesterday.
So. Oh. Well, I'll tell you what I can talk about. You may want to take a little vote. Kind of evangelical. Well, I'm just going to ramble because it's strange to do a breakout session before you actually talk, right? So, I've woken up today and I'm in this room. Like people are like, what are you going to talk about? You know, and I really did when I got here yesterday. I was like, so what's the vibe been like? Who's showing up? Like what's going on? Because you know, when you show up somewhere, you don't really know what the audience is or kind of what people are into. And everyone was like, you know, I was like, well, I think everyone's just big theology geeks for sure. And I was like, well, that's cool because I'm a theology geek, you know. And the only reason why I've ever been invited to speak anywhere is because I've made some movies, or else there's really no reason to ever have to listen to me talk, is that I've made something, and if you make something, people think that's kind of valuable to, you know, come and talk on things. Now, I wish I could make a living just thinking about theology in the Bible, because that would be amazing. But I haven't found that job that actually pays enough to do that. But it really is my hobby. I mean, I'm a filmmaker by trade, but I'm just a Bible. I'm a Bible geek, you know. I mean, I love, you know, that and the UFC. Probably the two only things I want to talk about, you know. And I'm being serious. It is like I could talk forever about mixed martial arts. I could talk forever about God, you know. And I like to go on the skinny branches, like, you know, once you're Orthodox and you got it down, okay, fine, cool. We all get it. We kind of know what we have to do not to be a heretic. And that's great, you know. But I like when you can get behind closed doors and be like, yeah, but the Bible is just bizarre. You know, and I think sometimes we can get, I know I can get, so focused on, we figured it out, we got it all down, you know. But the deeper you go, it just gets crazier and crazier and crazier. And I think what Scott was talking about really got me thinking too, was just like, man, once you go deeper into God's word, you can't figure it all out. And people don't believe me when I say this, I think I've read 3 fiction books in my life, maybe. But I've read countless books on theology, history, you know, books on the Bible. I mean, just, you know, but for some reason, when I open up fiction, because I think I grew up not reading fiction, you realize you actually have to develop that. You actually have to develop to sit through how writers describe something or set something up, you know. And I never developed that. So whenever I meet writers who have written books, I'm like, can you tell me about your book in 30 minutes, 20 minutes? And they'll tell me, I'm like, that sounds like an amazing book. Thanks for sharing it with me. So I don't read much as far as fiction. But by the time I became a Christian in my mid-20s, I just dove into the Bible. And so I probably try to get maybe too much out of the Bible than maybe I should. But it's the only thing that I really read. The good news is, there's plenty in there for the rest of my life to try to be digging out of, you know. As a filmmaker, again, I'm a filmmaker by trade, and that just sort of happened because I thought I was going to draw comic books. That just didn't work out, you know. And I started filming. It was the early 90s, and thankfully at that time, providentially, there was a lot of music, and actually a new music scene exploding. especially where I was, being in Southern California, I was 30 minutes away from Hollywood and every band was coming through, and I said, okay, I'm gonna become a filmmaker, and I was young and dumb and trying to meet bands and film bands and make music videos. And somewhere along the way there, and I'll talk a little bit more about this when I give my talk, but along the way there, met a bunch of Christians and ultimately came to Christ and had to start reading. And had to start reading the Bible, you know. Had a tough time once I became a Christian. I'm sure some people know this story, you know. It was my burn my CDs phase. Like, what do? I'm a Christian now, and I have all this music, I have all this art, you know. What do now, you know? And plus, I made a living in the industry, in making music videos, in being around secular music, that was a tough period. It's one thing to look at your CDs and say, am I gonna throw them away? I'm a Christian now. Or look at that and go, but that's how I make my living, is working with bands and working with music. And God was incredibly gracious, because every time I tried to leave my vocation, he just made it really clear that I wasn't qualified to do anything else. You know, probably because I didn't go to college, you know, or barely got out of high school. The only thing I actually knew was filmmaking. And even that, I didn't know very well. I still don't know it very well, but there's something about it when you say, it's the only thing I know how to do, it's what I'm going to do. So in that process, though, trying to figure out how was I going to keep working with bands, how was I going to make moral decisions and judgments in regards to what projects I did, and the worst thing about being an artist, especially coming to Christ mid-20s, coming to Christ in a vocation that's documented, you know, like we live in a world now where I can type my name into YouTube and see myself pre-Jesus on the set working with bands from a making of or something that, I mean, and then becoming a Christian, I can still see videos that are never gonna go away on YouTube that I made as a Christian, like day one as a Christian, week one year in, and I can go, oh gosh, like I can't, like you, I remember thinking, I look back now and go, gosh, I would never do that now. And we all have that in our life as Christians, you know. It's just weird for me that all my decisions, my sanctification process as far as decision making is all Googleable. And you can see it. And so as that process, as I was sort of, you know, growing in my faith and trying to make decisions, and being in art, being in the film industry, it was a really tough process. And it's one thing, and there may be a point to this talk, we'll see at some point. It's one thing to be a Christian, be like, okay, now I'm the outcast in the world. And again, I'll explain more of this after lunch. This is more of a tease to be excited for my talk. I'm gonna fill in. How about that? That's the point. This is more of a, this is the trailer. I'm a filmmaker. This is the trailer. And we're gonna try to hit on some things here that I'd be like, I wonder how this is all gonna work out in this talk. Because it's after lunch. I get the after lunch slot. Come on. No one wants the after lunch spot. But it's one thing to be sort of this outcast now. Oh, I'm a Christian now. And then you get the curse of being reformed. And then you're another outcast. You're like, at least I got my Christian brothers, I'm a Christian. It's like, wait, no, now I'm reformed. And you kind of take another step over here, and you're like, ah, then like, okay, what's cool, you're reformed, you know, like, and then, you know. And it's like, oh, you're a 5-point Calvinist. You know. And you think, well, okay, that's as bad as it gets, right? And then it's like, you know, oh, now I'm into homeschooling or Christian education. And you're just getting farther away, you know. And then God forbid, it's like, am I going to start baptizing babies? And then it's over. And then it's over, right? Or so you think it's over until you're like, am I going to give the baby communion? And you're kind of like all the way over here, and you're like, the only thing I see next is Greek Orthodoxy. Like that's, and you've already got the beards, most of you, for Greek Orthodoxy. So don't act like, and you're like, you just keep going, and like, and then you end up in Arizona, and you're like, maybe my people? I don't know, you know? Because you don't know where everyone's at on that trajectory. And so, in the midst of that, trying to make films, which is a funny thing, because everyone assumes that if you're a filmmaker that you have all this control to make just whatever you want to make, you know? As if anyone in this room is like, you know what I'm going to do tomorrow with my life? I'm going to be this. I'm like, no, like we're all locked into something. We're all trapped into something. And there's very little wiggle room. And as a filmmaker, I have to beg people to give me money. I have to literally beg. Or maybe raise some of my own money. I mean, it's pathetic, okay? And if I'm gonna go and get money to make something, there's no just world that sits there and says, hello, filmmaker, how much money would you like to make something? You'd say, I'd like X amount because I'm gonna make this project. And they give it to you. As a filmmaker, you're an opportunist, because that's all you got, because it takes way too much money to make movies. It just takes a lot of time and money. And so if you take money from person X, and person X is like, you know, I'd really like to put some money into a movie that's, you know, safe for the whole family. Okay, I'm in, because I'm a filmmaker. I need money. I'll do it, you know? Someone's like, you know, action films. I'll do it, whatever you want, I'll do it. I'm a filmmaker, you know? Like being a musician, you don't be like, the only gigs I show up to. No, you show up where they pay you to show up. I mean, right? I'm a filmmaker. When I show up, I'm on the set of what somebody paid me to show up on. Be like, oh, I don't show up on family faith movies because family faith movies are lame. A real Christian film would be, if you got the money to give me to make a real Christian film, call me. And I'll make it. But you know what? It's just a bunch of weirdos and freaks out there in the world with money. And that's where you're going to take it. And you're going to make whatever the opportunity is that comes before you. Again, it's just like being a musician. You would never say, I only play rooms with these dimensions and this sound system. You know? I'm looking at Ivy. I'm just connecting here. I can look one back too. But it's more personal with IV. And so, you know, I've met people and they say like, I just don't get your films, man. I mean, like, you should just be create a higher standard in the movies you've made. I mean, gosh, you've made these shaky cam documentaries that barely are in focus, and then you've made, like, you know, Kirk Cameron movies are just so stupid, you know. And then you made like Free Speech Apocalypse, and that was just way too intense. Like you, like Doug Wilson, woo, just get off the Wilson train, man. You know, and it's like, if you'd like to write me the check, I'm the monkey. I'll dance. What do you want to make? I mean, that's how it is. When I first started, again, I met someone. I got $200,000, and if you give me an action film, I can go sell it overseas. All right. I made a horrible, stupid action film. And I think I made $20,000 off it. You know, I mean, that was my salary for 6-7 months, which is not enough to live. But you take whatever gig you can get, and then you get away from that, you run into people who then see you and say, oh, you're a Christian, you're the arch, this, you know, like, your standard should be, you know, like, and you're like, standard? Like, I'm hustling like everybody else. I don't come to your job. Right.
right.
And be like, you work for a bunch of non-Christians? How many people here work for non-Christians? You should really raise the bar on where you go and work. So, look, and no one likes criticism, you know, and, you know, I always tell people, I've by the grace of God, I have failed forward. I don't know how God even does it. I have failed. There's not a project I've made that hasn't failed. Failed critically, failed financially, just failed in my process of making it. Just failure after failure. If I wasn't reformed, I don't know if I can make any sense of that. You know, I really mean that. And again, I'm going to tie in why that is on when I do my talk. And when I give my talk, I'll just preface it now. I will be stealing from everybody. I have very few original. I'm even going to steal from Scott's. I mean, I already got 9 points that I'm going to work in from Scott's. Try to make them my own. But if you run it through a plagiarism software, it'll come up his name. I'm pretty sure. Because you're here, I'm going to ask you a question. And again, part of my story, which you'll hear more about, is when I became a Christian, day one, and the conversion's kind of gnarly, I can't wait to explain it, but day one, I pick up the phone and I call the person. There were three people in my life who were Christians, and none of them shared the gospel with me, just so you know. I was around Christians for about 2 years. No one shared the gospel with me. They didn't need to. I wanted whatever was going on. And they were all Christians. But there were three in particular, and I called one of them, who was Dave Bonson, who was Greg Bonson's son. I said, Dave, I gave my life to the Lord today. He goes, awesome. Come down to my house. I was like Irvine at the time, so it was like a 2-hour drive from where I was. I drive down there. Dave gives me the great debate between Bonson and Stein on tape, cassette. He gave me Before Jerusalem Fell, I believe, by Kenneth Gentry. And he gave me, I can never pronounce his name, Marcellus Kick? Keek? How would you say it, Scott? Kick. I think on Revelation either 20 or 21. He said, Darren, dive into these three resources, you'll be just fine. That was day one becoming a Christian. Which, by the way, if you know nothing about Christianity, it's like learning a new language. It's not a problem. Not a problem at all, because you know nothing. You know, there's no Christianese. And that became my Christianese. And I would listen to the debate, I would read, I don't know what presupposition is, I don't know what transcendental is, I'd just go, I'd look it up, I'd figure it out, listen to it again, over and over and over. Within probably the first 2 years, I think I read everything I get my hands on by Van Til. Everything. I'm talking new, this is my only vocabulary, is reading Van Til. Which means I might be semi-fluent in Dutch, I'm not sure. Or at least bad Dutch translations to English. And of course, Bonson, I read everything, gotten every tape. Covenant Media Foundation was the only spot there that you could get all this stuff. And that ties into how I end up even in a place like this. But I go back to you, Scott, because I can't remember everything I've read. I can't, you read, there's a lot to read, and you know. I thought, because I met another person who said they were a Van Til expert. I said, oh, that's so exciting. We started talking. I said, isn't that interesting how Van Til got the impossibility of the contrary from Aristotle? I said, well, I don't know if that's the case. I never heard that before. And somewhere in me, I remember reading something that the impossibility of the contrary, Van Til saw from Aristotle and applied it to presuppositional apologetics. My question to you, Scott, is, does that ring any bells?
Yeah, it does. I think he would, Van Til would refer more to Kant than to Aristotle, because transcendental is kind of a distinctly Kantian term. But certainly Aristotle had a notion of principium, where you have to stand somewhere in order to assert any one thing, and where you stand is a place behind which you cannot go.
So right.
From that perspective, yeah, he would attribute impossibility of the contrary to Aristotle's philosophy.
And I remember hearing that, the impossibility of the contrary. The impossibility of the contrary. And the more you reflect on that, it's beautiful. It's the MMA, it's the rear naked choke. Because once you're in it, you can't get out. Especially if you got some hooks in. And the and so what I loved about that was, I grew up at an older brother and lived a crazy, crazy, horrible life. But it was a ballsy life. There was nothing wimpy about it. My brother was gnarly, his friends were gnarly, it was violent. And when I heard the impossibility of the contrary, it was like just throwing the gauntlet down. Wait. Christianity is true. What's your proof? Well, the impossibility of the contrary. Well, okay, take your highfalutin language, you know, which, by the way, isn't even that highfalutin. It's actually a pretty simple term, right? I mean, everyone knows impossibility. Everyone knows contrary. But you put them together, everyone's like, oh. These reform people with their words. It's a simple, the impossibility of everything else. The opposite, the impossibility. Well, what do you mean by that? I mean, give me a worldview that makes sense of everything you do and you think. Just give me one. Because it doesn't make sense. And I was like, that is, what struck me was there was something so tough about that. I don't mean that in a macho way, but there was something so, you know, the impossibility of the contrary, that this faith, this thing we contend for, this thing that we believe in, that you could actually say with confidence, well, no, I'm nothing else makes sense. And as someone who grew up in a very punk rock environment, it was nice to finally settle into the reformed world, where really this is just the new punk rock. This is just the new, I mean, look at this room. I mean, this is a motley crew in this room. And I'm a part of it, and yet Scott's here too. You know what I mean? Yeah, the blazer on. You found it. I was just saying, you threw it off earlier, Scott. Remember when you stepped on it and you were like, Geisler! Geisler! I mean, I'm adding a little, but that's the way it came across. But he saved everybody. We're cool. But these were fighters. Again, there's no structure to this talk today. These were fighters, and because you can't get around, because you can't get away from the culture that you're in. I was looking around, and as messed up as we all are, though, at some point you have to pick. Yeah, but what group of messed up people do I kind of want to travel with? And the reformed world was. It was where I wanted to be. It was where you could actually fight. You could hash things out. It was, but it was just, it was, you know, some people talk about being authentic. And I mean, it's like, and Scott made that point, that Calvinism, like, what are you talking about? It's not God in a box. I mean, I'm going to ride 5 years on that, Scott. That was. It's like, no, we're actually being respectful to what God can do and his authority and his power. And so what I saw in sort of the Reformed world was a place where, as I was burning my CDs, as I became a Christian and trying to figure out how am I going to do all this, it was actually the Reformed world where it was like, no, you can be a troublemaker. No, you can still burn things down. You can still get into fights. No, you can still get into dangerous territory. And I didn't see that with my evangelical brothers. I just saw a lot. I was born and raised in Southern California. I'm in Idaho now. I wear this, I say, because in case I get killed out here during my talk, at least they'll know where to send the body, okay? I grew up in Southern California, so my Christianity was, it was Van Til, Bonson, preterism day one. By the way, one more category. And yet I was in Southern California, Harvest Crusade. I was, around, Calvary churches and Calvary chapels. And I think the first day I finally went to a church after become a Christian, I walked in. I kid you not, they dimmed the lights. A screen came down in meteors. And it was like, world's coming to an end, people. And I just like. And I'd seen, I grew up as a non-believer, you would stop at TBN, you would stop, and you would watch. And this is how I know I'm saved. Because I can watch Benny Hinn all day. That's how saved I am. It's kind of Bible-y, you know what I mean? That's so wrong, but it's talking about Jesus, like nine of them, but like it's. I remember watching Jesse Duplantis. And I'd be watching and go, look at these idiots. And like 3 hours later, I'd still be watching TBN. It was like my family was there, but I only knew them by way of the crazy uncles. But I knew I belonged in that family. A day in Jesse Duplantis' house is better than whatever that verse is, right? Whatever that, I knew I wanted to be with Christians. I wanted to be there. And when you're not there yet, even Benny Hinn looks good, And he looks good, He's got a little outfit going on. By the way, didn't Benny Hinn just disappear? Kind of raptured, no, but like, he just, like one day, like I remember when I became a Christian, I was Hank Hanegraaff, Bible Answer Man, because day one of being a Christian, and this will be part of my talk, day one, I remember someone called, maybe day two or three, it was a band that was coming through town, and they were calling to do the normal shenanigans that they would call me to be a part of when they'd come through town. Hey, Doan, we're going to blah, 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 whatever. I was like, hey, I can't. Like, what? What's going on? I'm like, I'm a Christian. I became a Christian. I was so excited. And they were like, oh, we're going to have a talk. I was like, right on. It's funny. You can actually be kind of like worldly, and then you become a Christian. You kind of get okie dokie at first. Like, it's kind of like, hey. Like, Jesus kind of get a little okie dokie spirit, I was like, hey, they want to come and talk about Jesus. This would be great. The first week of being a Christian, it's just all possibilities, right? Then like week two, you're like, this sucks. This just like, what did I get myself into, Like, so band comes into town, they're like, hey, here's why you can't trust the Bible. How's that? It's been translated so many times, like the game of telephone. It's good. And which is funny because 20-something years later, there's like five things people have when they tell you not to be a Christian, why you can't be a Christian. I mean, that's it. I mean, it's like, it's not evolved. Talk about proof against evolution. Like, their argument hasn't even evolved. There's like, which is why, because like, it's like the devil. He's got like one trick, like, that's it, If he's not bound, that's a whole other question. There's like five things. I remember sitting there at that table And I had no training yet. I had no nothing. And I was just sitting there. They were kind of going through like, you can't try. And I remember at one point I just said, nope. I said, no, you can't trust the Bible because it's been written. I mean, play the telephone game. I'm like, doesn't apply. They're like, and I was like, why did I say that? Like, I had no training. I was like, no, you're wrong. No, you're wrong. Then when they left, I was like, I better get some books. Like, I was like, I knew. It's like, no, there's got to be answers to this. And that got me into apologetics, and that got me into, because God didn't let me leave He didn't let me leave music videos, the culture, Hollywood, any of that stuff. And so I was just in it. And I had to answer to people every single day, you know, about why I became a Christian and all these different things. Got to the point to where I'd show up on the set and different record company producers would pull me aside. They'd say, listen, please no talks at lunch. Because it's going 2-3 hours. You know, okay. Then of course lunch would come in, you know, and then we'd have a conversation. And I shot a music video for, gosh, I gotta get the band, because if someone can Google it, it'll make the story so much better. I wanna say Behemoth or, no, it's a worse name, but, and they were from Germany. And they actually wore the outfits. Like, I mean, it's kind of like a joke band, but they weren't a joke band. They were real. They wore like the spikes, and this isn't like the 80s. This is like the 2000s. This isn't even like this. Like, and that was their thing. But they were getting really, really big, and so they're just these big Germans, and they're wearing the outfits. They have like horns, and you know, and it's hilarious. And we're at lunch. Lunch, again, this is where all the problems happen. I'm sitting there at the craft service table with all these guys in these outfits, big, strong Germans. And they start talking about the Bible, and they start going through the same things and all these different things about the Bible. And we start talking about, you know, Word of God, and we start going through things. And we're sitting there, and at some point, I had come to just the idea of absolutes, and are there absolutes, and how can we gauge anything if there's no absolutes? And the guy was saying, well, I believe people are free to do what they need to do as long as they don't hurt anybody. And I'd made some sort of classic apologetic kind of response just in regards to absolutes, and if there are no absolutes, that I could just pick up a gun and just shoot you in the head here, something like that. And one of the big German guys next to me, in the full spiky outfit, he turns back to the band and he says, you know, that's a very good point. One we must think about. If there are no absolutes. I don't know what accent I'm doing, but. And they all went, very German. We will think about it. We will think about it. And I remember in that moment reflecting back to day one being with the band to, I don't know, 10 years later or something. And just what a funny picture that will be to even reflect back on in heaven if I can see it, right? This is the death metal Satanists in their outfits from Germany, which is kind of scary, unless we're talking about the reformers, sitting there and just talking about that stuff and realizing that people's hearts and their minds can actually soften even no matter what they're wearing. And so I've never left this industry, and I've never considered myself, I mean, people around me kind of get frustrated, you know, and maybe I don't use the term, maybe people mean it, but in a lot of ways, I've just kind of seen myself as a hack. I mean, I wanted to draw comic books, couldn't get a job doing that, and I somehow convinced bands to let me make music videos of them. I never thought I was the best at doing it, But there was a point where I did it long enough where it was going to be my only job. It's you know, and so do I think I'm the best at it? I think no, not at all. Do I think the criticisms of my films, you know, are fair? Sure, you know. James White gave my last film a C-. He said, C-, maybe D. You know, said it was just, couldn't follow it. It was kind of arty, like whatever, you know. And so I wrote James an email after I saw the review, which is funny because I found the review. Turns out all my friends knew about the review and didn't tell me. I was like, wait, you guys knew, like, you guys know I like James White. They were like, yeah, no. I was like, you knew? I saw David. I was like, Chocolate Knox, like, you knew? He's like, yeah, I just, you knew James White gave me a C-, and you didn't tell me? And the first 5 minutes of the, like, he was doing, like, first 5 minutes of his review, I was like, James liked my movie. This, oh, no, he didn't. Like, the first 5 minutes, he was like he liked. I wrote, and then at the end, he says, well, I'd have to give the filmmaker a C-, but I don't think he'll be happy with that. So I wrote James White a letter, an email, a letter. I, like, wrote a letter. I was like, dear James White, we pray for you constantly. Like when your friends go to seminary, they're like, hey, man, I'm going to seminary. You're like, all right, bro, love you, great. Yeah, I love Jesus. Like, month later, you get, like, a letter from them, and it's like, you know, dearest Aaron, I pray for you daily. And you're like, when did Johnny become Paul? You know, all of a sudden, every letter is like, you know. Why are you writing me in Greek? Like, I get it. You're getting a few classes, you know. And, like, every letter you get is, you know, we pray for the saints continually. You're like. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, and then at the end, they're like, if you want to give me some money, you're like, oh, okay, yeah. Like, forget where I was. But, so I wrote James White an email back. I said, hey, thank you for your review. And actually, no, I'm actually very thankful for your C-. I just want you to know, like, I'm actually not offended by that. Thank you for the C-minus review, you know, and I appreciate your work and your ministry. He never wrote me back. But, I don't know. He was probably riding his bike somewhere. Didn't have time to get to it.
He probably had the robot voice reading it to him on the bike at three times that.
I remember, because, like, you become a Christian, but you and I did 90-something, and you're looking for resources, you stumble upon James White. You know, James White, when you find James White, it's like you found the motherboard. Like, you found, like, all the computer chips that make it work. Like, oh my God, it's all right here. It's all here, and it's perfect. It's like Tron. Just goes, right? And then one day, it was just like, he was like on his bike. On like a video, I was like, what is going on James White's site? Like, it was that time when people realized they could do videos on the internet. And James must have went, well, I like riding my bike. Not even like talking apologetics, like if he was like doing like apologetics on like, I must, you know, quoting scripture, win the race, something like just, but it was just, and you'd watch these videos of him riding his bike, you're like, I guess it's just him riding his bike. I should have given him a review on his bike riding videos. I'm just killing time, 10:58. So all that to say, as Christopher Hitchens would say, and I could say more, all that to say, and I could say more, I'm going to try to tie this all in on my talk in regards to where I think we're all going, where I think the reform culture is going. I think it's a very serious question to have to ask. And I say this respectfully, but I say this respectfully, Scott. The guys like Scott, and the reason why I don't say Dr. Oliphant, I'm always insecure, I'm gonna mess up his last name, so I say Scott, so it's not a disrespect. Or I think I'm gonna say Oliphant, and so I find myself saying Scott. These guys are gonna be gone soon. Sproul's gonna be gone, MacArthur's gonna be gone. You know, no, not rapture soon, no, I mean, this generation that we are soaking everything up from. We are so far from their character. I mean, look at this room. We're a bunch of dirtbags. Don't even know how to dress. And I'm one of them. We are so far from these greats that we are just soaking from. And so how we're going to be able to take what these men have done and apply it to this next generation of reformed thinkers and culture, I think is a huge task. It's a huge task, and it's something I've thought about for a long time, because all those guys are going to be gone within 20, 30 years. And there's going to be this huge, huge chasm left. And I'm scared what could possibly fill it. And so if we don't start to understand that right now, we're taking all these things from these guys, but what we're taking from them, are not the right things. They are good things. But the things that we need to be taking from them are the things that we're not understanding are the reason and the thing by which we're able to do all this stuff. These guys built infrastructure. These guys built schools. These guys publishing companies. These guys have built things. And if we don't understand or get an idea of how we're going to actually build some sort of infrastructure for this next generation of reform, I don't call it reform theology. I call it reformed culture. It's reformed culture. It's reformed worldview. Because the term reformed, I don't know anyone that holds Calvin's view of a baby in the womb. I don't know anybody, you know. That baby's a Christian in the womb. It's a Christian. Everybody's like, Let's get to something else Calvin said. Maybe it's Luther, one of them. So when I say reformed, I mean, I think we do ourselves a disservice to people like this back here. I think I've read through the confessions, I don't understand it. Not a lot of it, you know. And so we, whether we like it or not, we're going to be the pop music version of the great reform thinkers. And that's going to be what it is. And so my talk after lunch is going to be about how I think we can bridge that gap between where we're at right now, the generation before us that has laid all this. And I'm going to end with this. Might not be enough time, but this is why when I first became a Christian and started studying Van Til and all these guys, I have no idea what's going on. I'm trying to understand the PCA and the OPC and what is this world, you know? And it's like and you can correct me later on this, but I remember thinking at some point, okay, wait. They had a split in the church over an apologetic method. That just sounds stupid to me. I remember reading somewhere like it was, I'm condensing, but the concept was if we give here on method, apologetic method, although it encompasses way more than that as far as nature of God and knowledge, that it's just going to end up in like, you know, homos all in the church, and you know, I was like. Wait. So, apologetic method, they're like in the 50s or 60s or one, and they're talking about if we, it's going to end up in like homos in the church? Like, these guys are just alarmist. Oh, where are we at now? How did they know that if you just gave in on this, that it would actually lead to just everything going? And if you're back there, you're going, brothers, listen, we just have a different view on apologetic method, you know, with a presuppositional approach and an evidential approach. And I mean, and we all love Jesus. And they're going, yeah, but it's going to ruin everything. No, but I mean, we just have a different approach. I mean, I say there's, you know, I look around, there must be a God. Can I tell you about this God that might exist? You say, no, you're talking about, it's in their heart, they know, and they're like, no, I just, we're good with it. Well, if you keep doing that, guess what? The whole world's going to end up with like transgender bathroom things going on. That's not going to happen. And it's only been how many years? And they were right. They were right. And they must have looked like the most just wacky, nutty Christians quibbling over these little theological details about free will and predestination. Oh, gosh. And it's like, they were right. And so that should give us pause and reflection on, okay, what do they have to say right now to us? Because we better listen. So I'm going to try to put that all together into something. I've got a few hours to work something up. So that's all I got. I rambled off the cuff. I was just free flowing here. So thank you guys. I appreciate it. I could say if there's any questions, but I know we're probably getting close to, wait, is Nate speaking at 11? Nate Wilson? 11:15? 11:30. All right. Any questions? No topic needs to be. If any questions or thoughts, ideas, I'm more than happy to answer, or how much I make on a movie or whatever, you know, budgets, whatever. Any questions?
Marvel or DC?
Marvel. You know why, though? You know why? I didn't read books growing up. All my DC friends were like, they're just such better written. I was like, well, I don't know. And they were. Yes.
So this is not theological whatsoever, but I always see the budgets for movies like $200 million. It's inconceivable. Where does it all go?
Craft service, food. No. People, when you start running up 100, 200 people a day, it goes. I mean, it's like if you ever try to throw a party, right, and 10 more people are going to show up, it just, boom, it just goes. One of the things you get when you go to 200 million, as insane as it seems, is you're actually getting a better deal, because the thing that kills any business or any project or anything you've ever tried to put together, it's when you have to stop and say, do we have this here? Or do we have that? Or can we send someone to get something? So on a $200 million movie, everything's there. It might not be used. But if it needs to be had, it's there. So you'll walk on the set of a $200 million movie, and you'll see like three cranes just sitting over there that might even be used for the day, right? That's $40,000 per day for those cranes to be there, right? But the money it costs, and just to be more efficient, if you have to go get a crane, you make a last minute decision. So what you have with those kinds of movies, and that's why they're so, you know, I mean, there's a bad way to spend $200 million, and then there's an efficient way to spend that kind of money. When it's spent wisely, it's because everything's there, you have access to it, and nothing slows down production. So, any other questions?
Yeah.
Ivy? All right. My man.
Yeah. Are you ever, like, encouraged, no matter what, to make films the way you want to make them without the negative criticism, you know, entering, you know, into your mind and into your heart, to where you feel like, I got to shoot like this guy or this director? Or are you just, because I always get that from you, like, you don't care, you're still going to shoot what you're going to shoot, and if people like it, they like it. If they don't, they don't. Because there's a lot of people that...
And I'm fronting most of the time.
Yeah, I'm about to say, because there's a lot of people that...
When I do that, you know. Yeah. But it's the only way I know how to get through stuff. I mean, so it's kind of like... Yeah, I'm constantly insecure. I'm constantly think that what I'm doing is just junk. You know, there's just some things that I just know I'm never going to shake. There's just something as you get older... And you realize, okay, maybe that's the thorn. Maybe that's the thorn Paul was talking about. I don't know, but there are some things you realize that you know Jesus is changing you. You know Jesus has made you new. But you also know, like I just know I was a troublemaker my entire life. When I became a Christian, I tried so hard not to be a troublemaker. Like, I'm a Christian now. And I wanted to be good. I wanted to be so good. I remember I'd wake up. I'd say, I'm not going to swear. I'm not going to curse today. I'm not going to curse today. I would curse, and I'd come home and I'd cry, and I said that word today, and it would just ruin me, you know. And you work through those things, and eventually I just realized that You know, God didn't change much about Paul. You know, he just took those things about Paul and was like, now you're on the good side. You know, I mean, could you imagine James White on the other side? Woo. And so for me, it was like, I am a troublemaker. I can't keep my mouth shut. I'm 44 years old. I still come home from a dinner party or event or that, and I'm just like, why can't I keep my mouth shut? I just want to go out and not embarrass my wife. You know? Or say something stupid. Like, it just, and so trying to, you know, there's a point where you just, you start to kind of realize, I need to find a way. I'm going to open my mouth to make sure it's in the right direction for God, against the right enemies, not just shooting a room because I can shoot my mouth off, you know? And when it comes down to, and so all that to say that when it comes to my filmmaking and my approach and all that, I'm just as insecure today as I was day one. When I started, the first day I walked on a set, I knew I was a fake, I knew it was a phony, I knew I didn't know what I was doing. I still walk on the set every single day. That's exactly how I feel. You know, if I think back to the day my parents sat me down and said, we're divorcing, I'm right there. Just the tears, you guys. Now, Jesus has saved me. He's made me new. That pain has never gone away. Oh, well. Now I reflect back on that. Jesus made me a new person. That's God's providence. It was his divine plan. That it's like, no, it doesn't leave. Some things just don't, they just don't leave. And I think that's why when I talked about when people criticize my work, I'm like, brother, you can't get close to my criticism. You can't get close to how worthless I think I am. So you give me a C-, I'm up. But I know I'm not even a C-. And so at some point, you just have to put your big boy pants on and just not let people see the insecurities, you know, and just roll with it. But I, at this point, I know I'm too old to where, as far as filmmaking goes, I'm never going to shake the insecurity. I'm never going to shake the unworthiness. I'm never going to shake what I think the failures are. But if I think for a moment what kind of person I would be without that stuff, that person is horrifying to me. Me with success, me with peer reviews, I'm like, I would be a mess. I would be the biggest a-hole in the entire world. And I go, wow, God knows exactly what I need. He knows exactly what my diet is to even continue doing this stuff. I asked to come here. I was like, hey, can I come to Reform Con? Didn't I, Mark? I asked you, Marcus. You didn't ask me. I was like, hey, you're my friend, and you got a little thing going on. I mean, I know you got, like, doctors, but I'll come. Like, I had to invite myself. I mean, so, you know, when I saw some, they were like, well, I talked to Marcus. You said you probably wouldn't come to family. I'm like, wouldn't come? I'm begging to come. Like, these are my people. This is where I like to be. I'm a geek for this stuff. So this is the popcorn. I'm the popcorn at the event. The meat is back here. Okay? These are the meat. James White, Dr. Oliphant here. This is the meat. So I'm just the little intermission popcorn to kind of keep making it a little whatever. But so thank you guys for your time. Oh, we got one more. I'll take one more. We got one more. We're good. Well, get myself in trouble the longer it goes.
Do you like anime, and who is your favorite director?
Do I like anime? Only at Reform Con. I mean, I'm a wannabe artist, so I like anime. I mean, I like the style of it, you know? Like the technology, the drawings, the weapons, ships, architecture. Akira, I know that kind of is anime, but back in the day, that was like, to me, the highest level was Akira. But it's just too porny for me.
Yeah, there's a lot of
You see that? He did this. Yeah, there's a lot. There's a lot of that. So it's inherently about, like, it's inherently just repressed sex in anime. Not all the anime, but in the style itself, in what it is. I mean, every girl's got a skirt right here. She's like, ooh, like everything, you know. But with a gun now, you know, like, it's Asian culture is freaky in itself. It's all, you know, pristine and perfect. Then you open up a comic and it's like, they stuck what in what? And you're like, for a comic book? And you can't even get porn in China or Japan. But you can open up a comic book in Japan and just be like, so just there's something that, you know. So am I an anime guy? I would go with Akira. I would kind of stick more with Akira. Lone Wolf and Cub, I'd move away from and go more Lone Wolf and Cub in regards to stylistic stuff. And what was your other question? It was anime or a director. Early Oliver Stone. Early Oliver Stone. So I don't really...
Like
JFK Oliver Stone. So. Some old westerns. I mean, I'm a fan of, you know, old slow stuff. You know, anything that's old and slow with slow motion, I like. So, any final questions?
How much
for film? You try to get 10% of the budget. Okay, so a good standard is 10% of the budget if you're just the director. So I learned early on that if I could also be the editor, colorist, maybe writer, producer, that I could maybe make a living. You know, so when you're younger, $10,000 music video, there's only about $1,000 allocated for a director, right? So, you know, when I was younger, it was like, how do I get 4 videos a month to make a living? And so I would try to pack in 3 videos a weekend. And what I would do is I would rent all the gear on a Thursday for a Friday pickup, but all the rental shops were closed Saturday, Sunday. You returned Monday by noon. So for the price of one rental, I could pick up on a Thursday, shoot Friday, Saturday, Sunday, get 3 days worth of filming on a 1-day cost. And so from a business standpoint, you learn to do those things. It's a grind, you're grinding more, but it turns out you have to grind to make money. So, any more?
I gave Free Speech Apocalypse an A.
Okay.
That's brilliant, honestly.
Thanks.
I bought a few copies of people in our church. And
thank you.
I mean, we're at war, so that was very much a battle cry. And
where can you pick that up? Is it online? Or?
It just went, I'm going to announce it up there. It just went, it's Amazon Prime exclusive now. I don't know how we got through the censors. I don't know how we got through. We submitted it for an Amazon Prime exclusive, and it got through.
Wow.
And they just sent it, and they just sent me the confirmation. I was like, oh! We got behind the wall. Hard copies? Hard copy, I think you can get through Canon Press. Or if you just Google, I mean, I think you can get hard copies still on. We couldn't find people to keep printing Free Speech Apocalypse. So all the duplication, people were like, uh-uh. So we kept getting shut down. That's another good example. I mean, passionate about the project, we're at war, and I couldn't even get Christians to do PR for it. I couldn't get everyone turned us down. Everyone refused to be a part of it. They just, we can't touch the gay thing. We just can't touch the gay thing.
Yeah, I gave it an A too. We all watched it together.
Oh, wow. You guys are awesome. Thank you. Thank you, guys. Yes. I'll just tell you if I can remember. The Amazon Prime exclusive deal that we got, I get either 20 or 30 cents for every hour streamed. So I forget. So if they watch the whole movie, 90 minutes, something around there, it's worth about 40 cents.
So if we do like a Bitcoin taxing, we get a bunch of
us just. Right. Over. Actually.
You got a rocker in here. My computer ain't doing anything at home, so.
How do you? No, and what's actually really cool, I'll end with this, because this is really interesting, and this is where I'm going to talk about this, but I will give you this. The I just got the, so it's been up about a week now, about a week and a half. And bear with me here if I can get the stats here.
What category is it under?
I think it would come up under, well, just type it in. But I think, yeah, I think, and now work on the placement and the keywords and all that stuff. But I think it's political, spiritual, documentary, you know, all of that. But I was just told that, so in the last, I don't know, it's something like in the last week, it's already done like 60,000 or like 80,000 minutes, which isn't a ton. Then you have to divide that by 60, how many hours. But it's only been up a week. There's no promotion yet. We haven't begun a new promotion cycle for it yet. So it's fun. It's going to be fun to see what the Amazon Prime world does, because you can't stop people once they're there. It's in the system. It's not been taken down yet. So we will see what happens. Last minute questions? Yes, dear.
Do you listen to music? And if so, what type of music?
If I listen to music, yes. I think I'm a product of the time we're at right now, because I found myself now, I don't listen, like, I'll turn on Spotify, and I find myself just going to the mood button now. So music, which is funny, this is where we're at in music right now, right? Like, now I just, like, you know, and they have all those names for things now, and they know you. It's like, yeah. Early morning, just getting up, need to write a letter mix. You're like, oh, that's me right now. You know, late night, trying to wind down, but don't want to go to sleep, still want to be inspired mix. That's exactly where I'm at right now. Unfortunately, when I do pick something to listen to, if I'm just going to be honest, it's usually pretty bad rap. So, like, if I pick something, I'll still put, like, the first DMX album on.
Like a 90s rap?
Like, yeah, well, DMX would have been 2000s, And it's horrible! The first track on the first DMX album is the worst, filthiest thing ever. So I'm repenting in front of you all, but it makes me want to just get up and just go and be like, C minus, here I come. So thank you guys, appreciate it. See how I wrapped that up with a C minus? You see how I did that? Oh, call back.